remember Christmas as a child, decorating the family tree, carolers at the window, and drinking hot chocolate in front of a glowing fire. Relive those wonderful times again this holiday season, right here on Radio America.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now read Dragnet every day on the comic page of your favorite newspaper. Please consult your local daily paper. The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes. Best of all, king-size cigarettes brings you Dragnet on both radio and television.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a bunco detail. A team of confidence men are taking thousands of dollars from the people of your city. Their method of operation? Posing as solicitors for different charitable causes. There's no lead to their whereabouts. Your job? Stop them. Compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
Yes, compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
One, Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters for your protection.
Two, Fatima's length cools the smoke for your protection.
Three, Fatima's length gives you those extra puffs, 21% longer than standard cigarette size.
Fatima gives you more for your money.
And in king-size Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke. Plus, the added protection of Fatima quality. Buy Fatima in the bright, sunny yellow pack.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, February 16th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of bunco detail. My partner's Bill Lockwood. The boss is Captain Steed. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from the office, and it was 2:18 p.m. when we got the first through Valencia, the West Valley Hotel.
Over here to the left, Jeff.
No, no. Excuse me?
Sorry, we're all filled up. No more room.
No, we don't want to register. No, we are police officers. I'd like to check one of your guests.
You're the Raymond Seidel registered? S-E-I-D-E-L-L?
Let's see. No, there's no Raymond Seidel registered.
Small man, about 5'6", 130 pounds, tan complexion, being 35 and 40, wears armor and glasses.
Well, I don't know. What's the trouble anyway?
Anyone like that registered here?
Well, I was just about to say there's no Raymond Seidel. We got a Raymond Singer, though, a small fella. He wears glasses. Yeah. I'd say he was about 35 and 40.
In his room now?
No, matter of fact, he just left a minute ago. He went out for lunch, I think, just before you fellas walked in.
Where does he usually eat, you know?
Our coffee shop right next door. He's got a gray top coat on, gray hat.
Okay, thanks.
You can use that door right here. It connects to the coffee
shop. Right, thank you.
Spot him?
Yeah, fire under the counter for the front door soon.
Yeah, description checks out.
All right, come on.
Spotted us going to the front door.
All right, police officer, hold it up there. We can run the floor. All right, come on.
Where are you going, Ilo?
Alley up ahead. He ducked in there.
Down the ramp, show the Felder. I was right in there.
All right, come on. Let's hurry. You spot him, Bill?
No. Any other way out beside this ramp?
Wait a minute. Yeah, down the far end there. Another exit. I'll take that. You cover this end.
Right.
Hey, watch it, Bill. He's coming out. The boost it in.
All right, hold it. Look out, Bill. Coming at us.
Watch out for his tire.
All right, there you are.
All right, don't shoot, don't shoot.
I said hold it right there.
What's the pitch, anyway? It wasn't doing anything.
Hands behind you.
Raymond Seidel, is that right?
That's right. I wasn't doing anything. What's this all about?
You know as well as we do.
Look what you did in my car. Just look at it.
You cracked it up, mister. We didn't. Come on.
Come on, where? I haven't done anything.
We want to talk to you downtown.
I'm not saying anything. You can talk to my lawyer. Get the story from him.
We already got it. Come on, let's go. 2:35 p.m. We took the suspect, Raymond Seidel, back to the hotel with us where we checked his room thoroughly. Bill got on the phone, made arrangements to have Seidel's car impounded and a stakeout placed at the hotel. Then we drove back to the city hall and took the suspect to the interrogation room. A check through our records and identification bureau earlier in the day had revealed a fair-sized record for Seidel. He'd had four previous local arrests, two for petty theft, one for second-degree burglary, one for grand theft auto. He'd been convicted on one of the petty thefts and also on the burglary charge for which he'd served time in the state penitentiary at San Quentin. Bill and I started questioning him. The first half hour, we got nowhere.
I told you, I haven't been doing anything. I've been clean ever since I got out.
Where were you last night, Ray?
Knocking around town.
What'd you do?
Had a couple of drinks, went to a show, came out and watched some Ben Barno.
What's your name?
Helen lives up on South Custer, and you can ask her. She'll tell you I was there.
What time did you see her?
About 10 o'clock. Yeah, just about.
You're a liar, right?
Hmm?
You're a liar.
What gives you a call to say that?
It's the truth.
And four other people must be lying.
Well, what do you mean, what other people?
You know what I mean. Now, how about it, Ray?
I don't know what you mean, so help me. I don't.
Why don't you give it up, Seidel? You ought to know better. We wouldn't have you down here if we didn't have you pegged.
Pegged for what? I don't even know what you're talking about.
All right, then I'll tell you, Ray. About 8:30 last night, you put in a call to a Mr. and Mrs. Gerald Keyes. They live out in East Hollywood, Gladstone, 3962. Mrs. Keyes answered the phone. You told her you were taking contributions for European children, war orphans. You knew she was interested in the cause. You asked her for a donation.
You're crazy. That wasn't me. I don't even know the
You've done Mrs. Keyes, and she agreed to contribute. She offered $50. You talked her up to $150. She asked you where to send the money, and you said, never mind, you'd be out to collect it. 45 minutes later, you were out there. You parked your car by a candy store down the street from the Keyes' home. You walked up the block to the Keyes' place, collected the money, and you left.
Now, you prove it was me. You prove
it. We got her cold, Seidel. Mrs. Keyes' husband got suspicious about the setup. 45 minutes after you phoned, you were at the front door with your hand out. You had no credentials, nothing. He noticed you parked your car down the street instead of in front of the house. Got the license number of your car when you pulled away. So the owner of the candy store. You parked your car just outside his place. All three of them can describe you and your car. Mr. Keyes, Mrs. Keyes, the man at the candy store.
Yeah, they're right.
Getting over to you, Ray?
Gonna take more than a couple of people to build a case.
All right, we got more. You gave Mrs. Keyes a signed receipt for the $150. You signed it Tom Seidel. Our handwriting man checked the signature with a specimen of your handwriting we got from your package. Now, they both check, not a doubt in the world. What do you say?
I don't know. What would you say?
It's your jam. What's the story?
There isn't any. Why should I dig my grave?
Any way you want it. You're going to stand the load for the last 2 months, including the one you pulled last night. It makes 14 cases.
It's a lie. It's a lousy lie.
Cigarette, Ray?
What are you trying to do to me anyway? 14 jobs, I never hustled that hard in my life.
That's how many we've had in the last couple months.
Why load them on me?
Every one of them follow the same general M.O. Same way you worked it last night. We don't know where you got your list of names, but you contact people who are interested in different charities. You pose as an authorized solicitor. You get their money and then you take off. The last 2 months you've been collecting for more than 10 different drives. European orphans, the milk fund, summer camp for underprivileged kids, crippled children's fund. The people give their money in good faith and you take off with it.
Your
M.O. follows all the way through. It's a sour racket, Ray. We're going to lean hard on you.
I said, will you wait a minute? No, when I'm done, I'll give you the story.
Yeah?
I'm not taking the whole load on my back. I'll cop out to the one last night, but that's all.
You look good for all of them.
Look, will you give me a chance? The one last night was a first try for me. It's the only one I ever tried. I'm squaring with you. I was crazy even to make a pass at it. I should have known better. I'm not a punk man.
I already told you, Ray. Last night's a close match with the other jobs. You say you'll cop out to one. How do we account for the other 13?
Just among us. Whatever I say, I don't want credit for.
All right. What's the pitch?
Can I have that cigarette now?
There you are.
Yeah, thanks.
Here's a match.
Thanks. I got out of the thing Sunday night, doing a little drinking at this place on Boyle Avenue. There were a couple of guys at the bar who were talking about it. I didn't know them.
Talking about what?
A racket. Getting a list of marks and collecting charity money from them. These two guys weren't working it. They just heard it was going on. They were yakking to the bartender about it. They figured some out-of-town grifters were doing it.
And you figured you'd get in on the bandwagon, is that
well,
it?
Well, I thought I'd try a couple of jobs, that's all. Need a few bucks to tide me over. Didn't look like much of a risk.
What do you mean?
Well, I heard about the M.O. the grifters were using. Pretty simple to copy. I followed it through just the way I heard they did it. They had a half dozen jobs under their belt already. If you knocked them over and they had to stand the rap, a couple of jobs of mine wouldn't make any difference.
Free ride, is that what you figured on?
Well, what's the difference? I didn't get it. Figured you'd catch up with them and me take the rap for my jobs along with our own. That's just my luck. You get me instead, and now I'm up to stand the rap for everything.
That's a pretty fair story, Ray. Any way of proving it?
Sure, easy. These grifters started working here 2 months ago, didn't they? They hit pretty hard the first week or so, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't even in town then. I wasn't here the whole month. I was up in Monterey.
Any way of proving that?
Sure, ask the sheriff up there.
Huh?
Ask the sheriff. He'll tell you.
Well, why should he know anything about it?
He ought to. He had me in jail the whole month.
3:40 p.m. While Bill continued questioning the suspect, Raymond Seidel, I went down the hall to the squad room and put in a call to the Monterey County Sheriff's Office. They confirmed Seidel's story. He'd been arrested in the town of Monterey December 13th, approximately 2 months before, on charges of vagrancy and suspicion of robbery. He was confined in the county jail there from December 13th to January 15th, the same period of time during which the unidentified Bunko men had started their campaign of falsely soliciting funds for various charities. While the information cleared Seidel of any part in the Bunko charity operations throughout the city that month, he still had to answer for his actions the night before, soliciting contributions falsely from the couple out in East Hollywood, Mr. and Mrs. Keyes. After his statement was taken, Bill Lockwood and I drove Seidel to the main jail, where we booked him in on suspicion of 48 PC petty theft. Further investigation the next day and a half seemed to indicate that the last story we got from Seidel was pretty close to the facts. It was the case of a small-time thief imitating the apparently successful formula of a veteran team of Bunko artists, an imitation which in the criminal world is far from unusual. A week passed. Despite the broadcasts, the bulletins, and the special notices we'd gotten out on the suspects and their operations, there were three more cases reported. One of them came from a Mrs. Teresa Guilfoyle, the woman in charge of the crippled children's home. Bill and I drove out to talk to her.
This is the first thing I want to show you, officers.
What's that?
This way, please.
Go ahead, Lee. Yeah. Yes, ma'am?
Me, sweetheart. There are two gentlemen here I'd like to have you meet. Stephen, this is Sergeant Friday, and this is Officer Lockwood, their policeman. This is Stephen, officers. He's 3 years old.
Well, how are you, Stephen?
Hello, son.
He'd like to say hello, officers, but he can't. His legs aren't his only trouble. He can't hear. He can't talk, either.
Oh, it's too bad.
You're learning, though, aren't you, sweetheart? You bet you are. In a while with us, and you'll be talking a blue streak. All right, honey, you run along and play now. Real sweetheart, isn't he? I wanted you to meet him, so you'd see what this means to us. When I look at children like that, this whole mess just makes my blood boil.
Yes, ma'am, we see what you mean.
Hard enough getting people to contribute money to keep this place open, help those poor kids to walk and talk. Thieves have to make it even harder. The way things are, I can't see how we're going to get through the year.
Oh, how much do you estimate it's cost you, Mrs. Guilfoyle? I mean, how much in donations have these 40 solicitors taken?
Well, I know of at least $700 they collected from different people. Lord knows how much more money they got that was supposed to go to the home. I suppose a lot of people still think they gave their money to the right person.
Did you receive the notice we sent out about 6 weeks ago, ma'am, about how these thieves operated?
Yes, I did. I made a special note of it. When we sent out our annual appeal letter to our regular donors, most of your notice was incorporated right in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened. I guess they didn't pay any attention to it.
When did you first find out something was wrong, ma'am?
It was yesterday morning. One of our regular donors, Mr. Baxter, called me. He wanted to know if we received his contribution all right. He wondered because he didn't receive his regular thank you note. That's when he told me about this man who came to his house and collected the money.
I see.
As soon as I heard that, two of the other girls and myself got on the phone and called every one of the regular donors. There were 10 of them, just like Mr. Baxter. Gave their good money to help these tots, and we never received a penny of it. I've got all their names and addresses here if you'd like them.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to them if you want them.
Yes, that'd be fine. We'd like to check with each one. Now, this is the complete list, all the regular donors who contributed and their money wasn't received, is that right?
Yes, sir, all those we know of. There's probably a lot more, I suppose. You've been in police work for a few years, haven't you, Sergeant? You must have met all kinds.
Yes, ma'am, I suppose so.
What kind would you say these men are? I mean, going around and stealing the little regular income we have from donations. What kind of persons can they be?
Well, there's thousands of them, Ms. Guilfoyle. They walk every city in the world. They want money. They want everything that goes with it. They'll do anything but work for it.
But the money these men are stealing, they must know it's for these crippled children, to help them walk again, help them talk, little kids like Stephen.
Yes, ma'am.
And these men call themselves human beings. And they take help away from a child like that. Humans. I couldn't be more ashamed of them. ashamed to live in the same city with him.
Yes, ma'am.
You'd think God would punish him. You'd think God would come down and punish him right now.
Well, maybe he's even ashamed. Before we left, Mrs. Guilfoyle gave us a complete list of the names and addresses of donors who contributed annually to the upkeep of the crippled children's home. For the next couple of days, Bill and I contacted each one of them personally. Those people who'd already given their contributions to the thieves unknowingly were unable to help us. Their descriptions of the men who solicited money from them in the name of the crippled children's home generally duplicated the descriptions we'd gotten from the previous victims. None of them were very detailed, but they did seem to confirm our theory that there were two or more men involved in the Bunko operation. Receipts for the money they'd given the thieves were signed either by a Fred Wellman or a Norman Archer. The handwriting varied in each case. Those donors on the list who had not yet been contacted were the best hope we had of reaching the suspects. Since the crippled children's home appealed for funds only through the mail, we advised these people to get in touch with us immediately if anyone contacted them by phone and asked for contributions. A few more days passed, Monday, February 27th. We got a call back from one of these donors, a Mr. George Stage of the Consolidated Pool Company out in the valley. We located him supervising work at the site of one of their pool constructions in the Toluca Lake area.
Oh, yeah, glad to see you again, Sergeant. Say, could you hold on just a minute? I want to test that batch of mud and see if it makes you dry. It won't take a minute.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Andy, come here a minute, will you? How's that make you look to you?
Sure, nice looking pool, isn't it, Bill?
Big one. Sure be nice to have, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Why don't you look into it?
About all I could afford to do right now, look into it.
Okay, Sergeant, 6-2 and even.
Want to go over to the truck, move some of this racket so we can talk?
Aye, that's fine.
I hope I got something for you. Not sure if it'll be worth anything to you. You said on the phone you got a call last night.
Well, I didn't. My wife did. They wanted to talk to me, but I wasn't home yet. I'm finishing a pool for some folks in Encino. Have a seat there if you want. Clean off this running board for you.
Oh, that's all right. Fine. Well, what was the gist of the phone call, Mr. Stage? Who was it?
Well, as I say, the wife answered. Fella told her his name was Mr. Archer, said he was collecting for the crippled kids' home. Of course, the wife knew the setup. After you talked to me, I warned her about the phony collectors going around.
What'd she tell him, Anson?
Well, she didn't get a chance to tell him anything. He did most of the talking. Gave her a big spiel about how much the poor crippled kids needed help. Wife asked him if he'd leave a number so I could call him back when I got home.
Well, did he leave a number?
No. In case some phony excuse, he wouldn't be at the same phone, something like that.
No.
Now, to ask her if she couldn't make out a check, said he could come right out to pick it up. His wife said, no, she couldn't. Matter of fact, she couldn't. I've got the checkbook. Excuse me. Andy? Andy, get one of the boys to help you down the hole. You can't do that all by yourself.
My partner, Andy's a great worker.
Yes, sir. But what was the upshot of the phone conversation between Archer and your wife, I mean?
Well, she kept asking for a phone number or an address, someplace where I could get back to him when I got home. I guess they got it figured, though. He wouldn't give her a thing.
And that's the way it ended, sir?
Yes, sir, that's it. Might be I'll have better luck, sir.
I mean?
Well, this fellow Archer told the wife he'd call me back tonight.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
Because of its quality, its extra mildness, its better flavor and aroma, more smokers coast to coast are switching to king-size Fatimas every day.
Prove Fatima quality yourself.
Compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
1. Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters for your protection.
2. Fatima's length cools the smoke for your protection.
3. Fatima's length gives you those extra puffs, 21% longer than standard cigarette size.
Fatima gives you more for your money.
And in king-size Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality.
Friends, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Fatima contains the finest tobaccos superbly blended. And Fatima is extra mild, with a much different, much better flavor and aroma. Remember, Fatima gives you more for your money because it's king size and because you get the added protection of Fatima quality. Look for the bright sunny yellow pack. Switch to Fatima today.
Monday, February 27th, 1-3. As soon as we thought there was a possible Bunko suspect, might contact the potential victim, George Stage, money for my making arrangements to be ready for. At 6:45 p.m., we were at the Stage home when the suspect telephoned. He identified himself as Norman Archer.
George Stage followed up to the letter, agreed to make a contribution, and asked Archer to call at his home to pick up the check. He set the date for 9 o'clock that night to allow us enough time for preparations. We got in touch with Lieutenant Lee Jones at the crime lab, and he sent out two of his sound technicians with a microphone set up and a tape recorder. By 8 p.m., the installation was complete. The microphone concealed in the living room of the Stage home, and the tape recorder set up in an adjoining room. Bill and I were stationed at the recorder in the bedroom. 8:30, 8:45. We waited. 9 p.m., 9:05.
Somebody at the front door.
Yeah, you want me to hit it up?
Here you go.
Yeah, you're on the recorder.
Right, Joe.
Tape recorder right where it is. Don't let anyone touch it. We'll be back.
Yeah, all right.
He's calling out, Joe. Heading down the street. Grace it in.
All right, let's go. We'll call you, Mr. Stage.
Yeah, okay.
You see him, Bill?
Yeah. Down at the next block.
All right. Go ahead, slide to my side. Keep Costco. Get him sighted. Can you see him? One turning left. Grace it in. Is that him?
Let's see. Yeah, that's it.
Pull up close if you can, huh? See if we can make his license.
Give it a try. How's that?
A little closer. Okay, that's fine. One sugar, 16605.
All right.
I'll check it and see if it's hot. 1K80 to control one. 1K80 to control one. K80, control, request rolling make for stolen and DMV on one sugar, 16605. Repeat, 16605, damage the system.
Control one,
Yeah, he's pulling up. He's out there.
Right here.
Yeah, go to the house. Yeah.
Must be where he keeps his pet. Next up, neighbor.
The man at your door.
Okay, come in.
1K, go and go.
Control,
1K, 80.
Yes,
I'll be
brown hair,
flies.
Long tongue, position of rubbish. Position of bird, grand
theft auto. Also, 3 out of 10. I'm
coming from
6. 05. 1K, go and
get
it. Back to me. I'll let you in. Back Franciscan weekend, I have to suggest that you put Fatimas at the top of your shopping list. Let as money can be to have enough Fatimas around the house into the next week. When you shop, just look for the bright sun yellow carton. You'll find Fatima gives you an extra mild in smoke. Remember, Fatima gives you more from a cooking size and because of the added protection of Fatima quality. Get a carton tomorrow. Fatima.
Charles A. Sutton and his accomplice, Harold B. Mather, were tried and convicted on 3 counts of grand theft money and received sentences as prescribed by law. Grand theft is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for not less than 1 or more than 10 years. The initial suspect, Seidel, pled guilty to petty theft and received a sentence of 1 year in the county jail. Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Frazier. Heard tonight were Ken Peters, Virginia Gregg, Vic Rodman. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Al Gibney speaking.
King Size Fatima, made with the same people who make popular Chesterfield cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. Each Thursday night, it's Counter Spy on NBC.
Radio America, where the golden days of radio live again.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. A supermarket in your city has been robbed. The thief wore a disguise. You don't know who he is or what he looks like. Your job, find him.
It was Wednesday, August 13th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch, got a robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith, the boss of Chief of Detectives, Thad Brown. My name's Friday. I was on my way into the office. It was 7:58 a.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery. Morning, Frank. You been in long?
About 10 minutes.
Hmm. It'll be a hot one today, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what the paper says.
Anything in the book?
No.
How about those mugs? They come in from Burton?
Yeah, I put them in your box.
Thank you. Did you take a look at them? Hey, Frank.
What?
I said, did you see the mugs?
Oh, no.
All right. What's the matter?
Ray?
What happened?
Joe, you know me. You know how I feel about Faye. You gotta know, I didn't mean anything by it.
You didn't mean anything?
Certainly not. The farthest thing from my mind.
What was?
What she thought I meant. You know, Joe, sometimes I think Faye just don't understand me.
Well, I don't understand you either on this one.
Oh, that's right. You weren't there.
No.
Sort of got to thinking to myself you were. You know how a guy does.
Uh-huh.
I got to thinking to myself, I got a problem. You kind of think your old buddy knows all about it.
Yeah.
So I got to fill you in. I'll tell you all about it.
Right now?
Yeah. You see, after dinner last night, we had those Swedish meatballs that Faye makes so good.
The what?
Meatballs. Swedish ones.
Oh, yeah, I know. I had those out here.
Yeah, wonderful.
Very good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, after dinner last night, we went in the living room, sat down to watch the television.
Mm-hmm.
I switched on the set, and I kind of arranged the pillows and settled back. A couple of minutes later, Faye comes in with a box. One of those big flat ones like dresses come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She bought a new dress. Sure, that's why she fixed the meatballs.
I don't know how this is going to end, but up to here, I must be on Faye's side, I guess.
You are?
Well, I don't understand any of it.
Oh, well, I'll straighten that out. You see, whenever she wants me to go along with something she's already done, she always makes Sweetie sleep off.
Well, I could figure that part out. What was in the box?
A dress, Joe. She bought a dress.
Oh, it was a dress.
Yeah. She opened up the box. She shows it to me. Told me how she bought it on sale. Mm-hmm. You ever notice every time a woman buys a dress, it's always on sale?
No, I can't say as I ever have.
Well, believe me, buddy, it always is.
On sale.
On sale.
I don't want you to go through the whole day with this on your mind, but if you don't get to the point, the pretend horse is trying out. You know, talk about
it. Well, I didn't mean anything by it. Nothing. She held the dress up for me to see, and all I did, I just said, what size is it? You know how you do.
Well, look at these mug shots now.
Now, wait a minute. I want to finish. You asked me what I was mad about. I wanted to tell you. I asked her what size the dress was. She told me it was a 12. A 12.
A 12.
Yeah. So I just kind of casually mentioned that when we got married, she wore a 9. That's all I said, that she wore a 9.
Want to look at the mug shots now?
No, wait a minute. Will you help me with this thing? Used to be in partners. If you can't help a little, we'll look at the mug shots. When we were married, she wore a 9. And she just flipped her wig, Joe. She got real mad. Walked out of the room. Right out of the room.
Yeah.
I guess she thought I meant she was getting fat.
Yes, she did. Let's go. Corner Grandview and Union.
Yeah?
Hold up. By the time we got to the supermarket, a broadcast carrying effect had been gotten out to all cars in the city. A small crowd of people had gathered in front of the store, and the officers from the radio unit to keep them back from the entrance. An ambulance had been called, and when we got there, the attendants were giving emergency treatment to the day manager of the store. He'd been struck on the left side of the head just above the committee's getaway. The attendant told us that the man was suffering from a mild concussion. Frank and I entered the store and talked to one of the policemen who was there. He led us back to a small office in the rear of the place where we met the other two victims. One was the cashier of the store, Irma Watson. The other was the man who had the meat concession in the store, Tom Spence. We asked him to tell us what happened.
First thing I saw of him was when I parked my car up in the lot. The guy was standing right beside the door.
That's right. Just standing there, calm as could be. I saw him when I opened up the place.
Mm-hmm. You want to go ahead?
Well, I unlocked the door and we all came in. The man did, too. Just walked right in.
We don't normally let people come in for 8. Hardly ever. But since Gerald was there, we figured he'd take care of the man.
You mean Gerald's the man in the ambulance?
Yeah, that's right. Told up fella, gave him an awful clout on the head. Gave him concussions. Concussions to the head.
Tell you something about that, too.
What's that, Miss Watson?
I don't really think Gerald's hit that hard. I think he's just putting on to get sympathy.
Now, Irma, that ain't right. I could say things like that.
Maybe not, but I tell you remember the time he cut his finger when he was moving the cases of empty soda pop bottles?
Yeah.
Well, you were there, had to rush him to the hospital, have his hand sewn up. A lot of foolishness. He said the fever would have taken care of it. Sympathy, that's what he wants.
Can we go on with what we were talking about? What happened after he came in the store, please?
Well, I went upstairs and I turned on the lights.
Have to turn them off up there. Officers up there.
That's where I was.
Mm-hmm.
Turned on the lights and come down to open the safe.
Is that your job, to open the safe in the morning?
Yeah.
She's the cashier.
Yes, sir. What happened then?
Well, Gerald was going out back over the liver door. I'll go over to meet second and just written it up.
And where was Holden in during this time?
I was just kind of strolling around, looking at the different displays up and down the aisle, just looking.
Gerald opened up the back door and come back. Asked the fella if there's something special he's looking for.
Well,
guy said he wanted to know where the still at the Van Chovies was. Gerald told him. Fella went back to get some.
That's what Gerald thought, but we know different now.
Yeah, a lot different.
So how'd you go on, please?
Well, I was upstairs counting the receipts from yesterday, getting the bank statement ready.
Irma's a cashier.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know.
Where'd you go on, please?
Well, first thing I know, the man's standing right behind me, holding this gun pointed right at me. He didn't just said he liked to scare me out of my wits.
Must have been terrible, Irma.
It was. I just turned around and there he was with this gun, just about scared me to death.
That's when he asked you for the money, did he?
He didn't ask. He just told me to put it in the wooden box he had. Just put it in the box.
What'd he say? What were his exact words?
Well, he just kind of walked over and said, put the money in the box and don't cause no trouble. This is a stick-up. Like that, he said it.
Irma did just what he said.
Yes, sir. I gave him the money, dumped it all in the box, just like he said. Then he told me to lay down on the floor. Just told me to lay down and not to make any noise or he'd come back and kill me. I think he'd have done it, too.
I think he would have, Irma.
That's why I did what he said, flat on the floor.
Did he have the box when he came in?
Yeah, I had it under his arm.
I was down behind the meat counter. All of a sudden, I heard the scream.
That was me.
Leslie.
I let out a yell, and Tom here heard it.
Yeah, so did Gerald. We kind of looked at each other, and then I grabbed the meat cleaver and started up the stairs. I didn't know what was wrong, but I did know Irma was in trouble.
I appreciate that, Tom.
Well, I knew you were in trouble, and I came a-running. Got the stairs, come up the office, and then I saw him. He was just coming down.
He still had the gun, did he?
Yeah, had the gun in the box. I didn't know what was in it at that time, but I had an idea. I just hefted the cleaver and started up the stairs. Stopped when he saw me.
stopped right in his tracks.
Tom's awful brave.
Yes, ma'am. So he told me to get out of his way or else he'd kill me. Wade was pointing that gun around, trying to believe him. So I backed down the stairs and him right behind me. All the time, he had that gun pointed at me.
Where was the manager all this time?
You mean Gerald?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was upstairs.
No, I saw him. He was down by the cash register in front. He saw this guy coming down the stairs and he ran for the phone to call the police. The fella saw him and he took off after Gerald. I thought he was going to shoot him, but he didn't. Just hit him. Give him a concussion of the head.
He's after sympathy, that's all.
Oh, now, Irma, you're wrong. I seen it. He gave Gerald an awful hit right along here. Real hard.
Now, which way did the man go after he left the store, please?
He ran down that way, down Union.
Uh-huh. Will you describe the man for us?
Well, he was about 5 feet 6, and he was...
It'd be a little better if you told us one at a time.
I guess you'd never get it that way.
It'd be a little difficult for you.
You go ahead, Irma.
Well, I told the other policeman he was about the funniest-looking little man I ever saw. Real little.
Oh, not really. I think he just kind of hunched over.
Well, he looked little.
About how tall was he?
Oh, about 5'8", maybe 9".
Guess that's about right. Tell him about the way he was dressed.
Oh, yes. Had on this black overcoat and a hat, all pulled down over his eyes. The hat, I mean.
What color was his hair, do you remember?
Well, what I could see of it was kind of blonde, light-colored.
Yeah, that's right, and he had a mustache.
Yeah, real big. Looked like the old-fashioned kind, like people wore when I was a kid. You know, handlebar, black.
Real black.
Mm-hmm. Well, he left the store. Did you notice he got into a car?
Yeah, he did. I saw him run down the street and jump in one, a dark color. I'm not sure what kind it was. I think it might have been a Hudson, late model.
I saw that. I was looking out the side window upstairs, and I saw the same thing.
Did you tell the other officers about it?
Well, I didn't.
Neither did I.
I guess you better get out of broadcast on it.
Yeah. Did you happen to get the license number of the car?
Yeah, that's where I went to work. Got it written down right here on my apron. See? Numbers ain't too plain, but you can make them out.
No, sir, I can't. You'll have to help me there.
I got it, too. Right here. I saw him get in the car, and I wrote it down.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Having the number of the car is going to make it easier to catch a fella, ain't it?
It should make it a snap. Just find out who owns the car and ask the man.
Well, it's not going to be that easy, I'm afraid.
What?
Both numbers are different. A supplemental broadcast was gotten out carrying both the license numbers that the victims had gotten. Frank put in a call to DMV, asking him to forward all information on the numbers. The crime lab crew came out and went over the place for fingerprints, but they were not able to turn up anything that we could use. We continued to question the butcher and the cashier. We got a complete description of the thief. The one outstanding thing that both of them agreed on was the mustache. Both said that it was a direct contrast to the color of the man's hair and said that it might have been darkened with shoe polish or some kind of grease. People in the vicinity were questioned, but none of them were able to supply us with any new information. The injured manager was removed to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital for emergency treatment and then referred to his own doctor. Frank and I talked to him, but he only verified the story that we'd gotten from the other two people in the store. 12:45 p.m. We returned to the city hall and asked the staff's office to start a run on the M.O. for us. The victims were asked to go through the mug book, but they were not able to identify any of the photographs. Frank and I spent the rest of the day talking to the other storekeepers in the vicinity of the robbery. We asked each of them if they'd seen anyone loitering in the area, anyone who looked suspicious. From each of them, we got the same answer. None of them could help us in establishing the identity of the suspect. The kickback on the license number came in from Sacramento, but when we checked out the information, we were no closer to apprehending the thief. The next morning, Thursday, August 14th, Frank and I met in the squad room.
Hi, Joe.
Morning.
How's my old buddy this morning?
I'm all right. You sound happy. The problem with Faye straightened out?
Oh, yeah, sure. Got home last night. Everything's great.
All right.
Hey, we started last night.
What's that?
Faye and me. We're going on a diet. Both going to lose a little weight.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, lose a little weight. Anything new in the market holdup?
No. The staff's office should finish the run for us this morning. We can start checking out the possible.
Yeah. Good thing I wore my walking shoes, huh?
I get it. Robbery Friday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's right. No, that's all right. We'd like to hear it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. All right, we'll be out and see you. No, right away. All right, thank you very much. Bye.
What do you got?
Cashier out at the market, that Irma Watson.
Yeah.
She might have something for us.
What's that?
She says she thinks she knows who the suspect is. Frank and I drove out to the market. We went upstairs to the office in the rear of the store and met Irma Watson. She was seated at a desk with a large ledger book opened in front of her.
I got to thinking it over last night after I got home about the holdup man.
Yes, ma'am?
There's something about him, the way he acted and talked, made me think I knew who he was, that I'd seen someplace before.
Uh-huh.
Well, he worked most of the night just thinking about it, and all of a sudden it came to me, right out of the air it came to me.
Yes, ma'am? Go ahead.
Well, I knew where it was that I thought I knew him from.
Where, ma'am?
Right here in the store.
You mean he's a customer?
No, he works for us right here in the store. That's where I see him. That mustache kind of fooled me for a minute, but not for long. I remembered.
What's the man's name?
I didn't remember that.
Oh.
Not last night, but I came down here this morning and started through the books and came upon it. Got it right here. Take a look for yourself. See? Right there.
Jed Ellsworth?
That's him, I'm sure of it.
Does Ellsworth work here now?
Well, yes and no.
Yeah?
Well, he does and he doesn't. He's still got the job, but he ain't working right now. Got a leave of absence. He's got ulcers. Said he wanted to get him taken care of. Said he had to go out of town and see a specialist. Get his ulcers fixed.
When did he leave?
Last week. See, I got it right here. Last day he worked was Wednesday, August 6th. That was the last show. Mm-hmm.
Do you have his home address?
He's got information out for you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
It's him. I'm sure of it.
Miss Watson, we'll check into it.
Only thing I can't figure out is that mustache.
What's that?
The mustache. I can't figure out how he could have grown it so fast. Takes longer than a week to get a mustache like that, doesn't it?
Well, it depends, doesn't it?
On what?
Where you buy it. Frank and I returned to the office to run the name Jed Ellsworth through the record bureau. While Frank went through the packages, checking the description we'd gotten of the suspect, I went down to the stats office and picked up the list of possible that they had for us. 10:26 a.m. I met Frank back at the R&I counter.
Hi, how's it going?
It looks like we got a live one.
Hmm?
Got a Jed Ellsworth here pretty close to the description.
Yeah.
Record in the East, St. Louis. Done big time back there, not locally, though.
What do you call for?
Armed robbery.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Sent an immediate request to the authorities in St. Louis asking that they forward all available information on their suspect, Jed Ellsworth. 1:15 p.m., Frank and I drove out to the address we'd been given by the cashier at the supermarket. It was a one-story redwood house in the Beverly Glen area. We rang the doorbell.
Yes?
You like to see Jed Ellsworth?
He's not here.
Well, do you know where we can reach him?
What's this about? He in trouble again?
Ma'am?
Jed in trouble again?
We'd like to talk to him, please.
The cops?
Or police officers.
Uh-huh. Figures. What's he done this time?
Well, it's just routine. We want to ask him a couple of questions. Where is he?
I don't know.
Well, he lives here, doesn't he?
Yeah, I don't know where he is. I haven't seen him since day before yesterday. Packed up and left. I don't know where he went.
Well, didn't he give you any idea where he was going?
None. Went through my purse, took what money I had, and shoved off. Don't much matter to me if I never see him again. I'd probably be better off.
Wonder if we could see his thing.
Anybody left?
Yes, sir.
Sure. Come on in. They're in his room. I'm about to throw him out. I don't want him, and I don't think he'll be back for him this time. Down the hall this way.
Thank you, ma'am.
What are you after him for?
It'll be a little better if we talk to him.
Sure. Don't matter to me. I'm through with him. Nothing but trouble with cops since we've been married. I didn't know he had a record when I met him. Until after we got married, I found out he was a jailbird. Right after we got married, the cops started coming around asking questions.
How long have you been married?
18 months. Got him back in St. Louis. I said, right after he got out of jail, I didn't know a thing. If he was dead, wouldn't have nothing to do with him. I mean, nothing but trouble.
Would you know if he has any people in California?
But I ever saw him, never talked about him.
Did he drive a car?
Jed?
Yes, sir.
No, didn't own one. This is room. That's Jed.
Thank you, officer.
I'm going to throw it all out. Anything there you want, just take it with you.
I don't think that'll be necessary.
Well, the office is still good. What you don't take, I'll throw out.
Your husband got any close friends at all in town?
Yeah, got a lot of bums.
Can you give us their names?
One name I know, Larry Jessup. Him and Jed used to pal around all the time. I think his job at the store took up too much pal time. That's the reason Jed quit.
I understand your husband had trouble with his stomach.
Yeah, ulcer.
Was he under the care of a doctor?
Uh-huh. All the time taking pills and eating special things. Got to the point where nothing I cooked was right for the ulcer. We did nothing but fight all the time. Miserable 18 months. I'm glad he's gone. Never see him again. It'll be a week too soon.
Can you give us the doctor's name?
Yeah, got one of the bills there. Got it in with the rest of them. Reminds me, can you answer me something?
Well, what's that?
Am I responsible for his bills, the ones he ran of himself without my help? I got to pay him?
Well, ma'am, that's not a police problem. You better check with a lawyer on that.
Oh, are you?
Yes, ma'am.
More expense. Seems like all I do is put out money for him. Oh, I'm glad he's gone.
Do you have a picture of him?
You mean like a smash-up?
Yes, sir.
No, Jed wouldn't let nobody take pictures of him. Said it was bad luck.
He had a mustache, didn't he?
That's his bedroom.
Ms. Ellsworth.
Yeah?
You know what's on these dictograph records?
Oh, those are mine. I'm a stenographer. Some days I do work at home. Those are mine.
Oh.
Just letters. One thing you ever did for me.
What's that?
Make that box for records. Real big thing. Took them all day to make it. Just a plain, simple wooden box. I thought it was a Taj Mahal. One thing you ever did for me.
Your husband get many phone calls here?
No, not that you'd notice. Larry'd call once in a while. I told you there was real power.
You ever hear any of the conversations by any chance?
Just on this end.
You know what they were talking about?
Not too good. They used to get real secret. You know, low voices. They were planning something, though. I don't know what it was, but they were planning something.
Well, this fellow Jessup, he drive a car?
Yeah.
You know what kind?
Yeah. New Hudson.
We got the address of the suspect's friend, and we drove back to the city hall. We made arrangements for a stakeout to be placed on the house, in addition to asking Mrs. Ellsworth to call us in the event that she heard from her husband. We ran the name Lawrence Jessup through R&I, and we came up with a criminal record for him that listed several arrests for burglary and auto theft. According to his package, he'd never been convicted in California. We sent a teletype up to George Brett, the CII in Sacramento, asking for further information on the man. 4:50 p.m., Frank and I left the office and drove out to the address given us by the suspect's wife. It was a large boarding house in the Hollywood Hills area. We talked to the landlady. She told us Jessup wasn't in, but she expected him by 6 p.m. We asked if she'd ever seen a man answering Jed Ellsworth's description. She said that such a man was a frequent visitor in Jessup's room. 5 p.m., Frank and I, in the company of the landlady, checked the room. We found nothing to tie Jessup in with the robbery. We waited for him. 5:58 p.m., he came up the stairs and opened the door.
What are you guys doing here?
Police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
I still want to know what you're doing here.
Got a couple of questions we want to ask you, Jessup.
Go ahead. I got nothing to hide. Ask.
Where's Jed Ellsworth?
I don't know. I haven't seen him in a couple of days. Why?
I understand you two are pretty good friends.
We're friends. The guy's off his rocker.
What do you mean there?
What I said. Only got out of the can a couple of years ago. Right away, he's doing his best to get back in.
Is that right?
Sure. A couple of days ago, he called. Said he had to see me right away. Had a big idea for both of us to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to have to work all my life, so I told him I'd listen. He laid out this big deal where he could knock off a supermarket. It all worked out. I told him I didn't want no part of it. I could sure use the dough, yeah, but not to take a chance on going to jail for it. I already got a record. That's me the rest of my life. Lucky the last couple of times. It didn't fall. No, I just said I was crazy not to pick up some easy money.
You heard from him since then?
Yeah, I saw him yesterday. He came over in the morning. Told me to forget all about the market job. Said he realized it was wrong. Asked me to drive him out to Pomona.
What for, did he say?
Yeah, he said he'd walked out on Hazel. That's his wife.
Yeah, we know.
Said he left her and we were going to Pomona. Had a job out there.
You drive him?
Yeah, to a motel there. I can show it to you if you want.
Is he still there?
I don't know. As far as I know, he is. That's where I left him. Sitting out there counting his money.
What money?
He told me he drew all the dough out of his and Hazel's account. Said she wasn't going to get any of it. Must have had about $4,000.
You know what bank he had the money in?
No, he didn't say. I didn't know him and Hazel had that much. Of course, she works pretty hard. Thrifty, you know. Jed always said she was stingy. A lot of money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, had it in this wooden box, all stacked in there real neat. Hard to believe.
What's that?
About the box. Jed's about the laziest guy I ever knew. Last one to work with his hands. Sure proud of it, though.
Sure.
Said he made the box himself.
Larry Jessup, Frank, and I drove out to the motel in Pomona. We checked with the manager, but found that the suspect had checked out that morning. Fortunately, the room had not been cleaned yet, and we went over. On a shelf in a closet, we found the wooden box that Jessup had spoken of. It was a duplicate of the one that we'd seen at the suspect's home. We told the manager we were taking it with us and asked her to notify us in the event Ellsworth returned. Asked if he had a car when he left. Asked for the name of the model for Frank to come back from the suspect's room.
Sure looks like he pulled a robbery, huh?
Seems to be.
Joe?
Yeah. We checked with the automobile rental agencies in the area. None of them had seen a man answering the suspect's description. We asked them to call us if such a man did come in. We drove by Ellsworth's house and picked up the wooden box that he'd made for his wife's dictograph record. Both of the containers were taken to the crime lab for comparison. We drove to the market that had been held up. All three of the victims were shown the false mustache that we'd found in a motel. All three said it was identical with the one that the holdup man had worn. Investigation, Lee Jones cut from the same... The nails used were made by the same machine. The box we'd found at the motel was shown to both the butcher and the cashier. They said that it was the same one that the thief had carried. A local and an APB were put out on the suspect, asking that he be picked up for suspicion of robbery. For the next 3 days, the surveillance on the suspect's house was maintained. All of Mrs. Ellsworth's activities were observed. Sunday, August 17th, we got a call that the suspect's wife had left the house carrying a suitcase. The officers on stakeout followed her to the subway terminal in downtown Los Angeles. We met them there. Mrs. Ellsworth walked down to the landing and appeared to be waiting. Frank and I took over the surveillance. We waited. 9:30 p.m. 10. 10:15. 10:18 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see.
Quite the description. 1:31.
Let's get it. Yeah. Yeah, come on. Jesus.
Yes,
come on, buddy.
Hi, Ellsworth, hold it up. Police officer. Come on, drop the gun, Ellsworth. You're not going to get out of here.
Let's get it back to him. Down, come on, buddy. He's hurt.
I'll get an ambulance for him.
Dead.
No, we sent for an ambulance.
I didn't want him to get hurt. I didn't want him to get hurt.
Why don't you call us when you heard from him?
I don't know. He said if I met him, he'd give me some money so I could pay the bills we owed. He was going to give me some money. I was going to call you after I got the money. I was going to call.
Yeah, sure you were.
Chance to get out for money. Get even. He didn't care when we were together. I was the one who worried about it. He never cared. He never paid a bill.
Don't worry. He's going to pay this one.
Ed Warren Ellsworth was tried and convicted of robbery in the first degree and received sentence as prescribed by law. Robbery in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period of from 5 years to life.
You have just heard Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action, and starring Jack Webb. A presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
We are pleased to announce that soon you will be able to order many great different shows, 50 shows in MP3 format on a CD for a low price of $5, which includes shipping. If you are interested, please email me at radioamerica@inbox.com.